Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name is Brian, and as a result of taking all 12 steps, I have recovered from my sex addiction. It's nice to meet you all. It's so cool. I can never quite get over the fact that I'm speaking in New York City. From way over here in California. And it's an honor to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak. I love carrying the message, and welcome to anyone that is relatively new to SAA, or people that are returning after a relapse. We're glad that you've survived, and we're glad that you're back. This is the only illness that I know of that a person can actually be better off for having had it. But for me, that was only the result of having taken all 12 steps. My understanding is that today we're speaking on the 12th step, and so I'll try and speak from my own experience on how that 12th of the 12 steps worked in my life. I also have a somewhat, maybe it's not that unique, but an interesting experience in that I had been trying to beat sex addiction for 17 years using the 12 steps, and I was unsuccessful. And looking back on it, it was because I was, as this morning's reading warned us, I was looking for an easier, softer way. And the result was I was only able to achieve maybe 1 or 2 months of sobriety at a time. I'd relapse, I'd come back, I'd somehow convince myself with the help of other people that, well, it wasn't a complete loss, I learned a lot, and I'm here again, and I mean well, and, you know, 17 years later, I'm still acting out, I'm still coming to the rooms. I was miserable. So, what I get now from the steps is, well, maybe I should add that I since that experience, I was put in touch with a group of folks within SAA that were taking a look at the approach to the steps, and they were suggesting that when I asked them, when I solicited them, they were suggesting that perhaps the approach to the steps that I was taking was one that was perhaps far removed from what the actual authors of the steps had intended. And maybe I should, with one of the with their help, kind of go back and see what the difference was, like how I had been working the steps this past 17 years, and how the big book, which is, you know, the original instructions for the 12 steps, how they took it. We also read in the beginning of the meeting, rarely have we seen a person fail who thoroughly follows our path. And for those 17 years, I thought the reason I kept relapsing was because I wasn't being thorough enough. And so my typical thing to do after I relapsed was to come back to a meeting and get a new sponsor or get a new group and start through the steps one more time and try to be even more thorough this time. I'd do an even more thorough fourth step and a more cathartic fifth step, and then get back on my amends, and then try and be more diligent with my ongoing inventories and my 10th step, and then try and be really diligent with my 11th step. And when it came to the 12th step, the way I was practicing it was, oh, I'll go to a meeting and I'll share on the topic, and maybe I'll talk with some people after the meeting, and then I'll go home at the scheduled time. That's what I thought the 12th step was. And consequently, I was only able to achieve small amounts of sobriety at a time. So when these guys started to help me with the steps and started to look at the difference between the way I had been working the steps and the way the big book was suggesting this approach should be done, I saw that my problem wasn't the thorough part. It was that I wasn't following their path. It's the way that's stated is, rarely have we seen a person fail who thoroughly follows our path. And I was following a different path. I was following a path of groups of people who had their own path. They had basically interpreted the steps to mean whatever was convenient for them. And they were well-meaning, and for some people it worked, but for me, I wasn't able to stay sober. So I instead focused on the actual path that was in the book rather than the path that I saw certain individuals work. And almost overnight, I got better. It's been almost 5 years since I've acted out, and I can honestly say that I am free from the obsession to act out. That was my real problem. I could gain certain periods of abstinence from acting out, but even during those 2 or 3 months of abstinence, I was still haunted by the obsession of sexual temptation. And that's no way to live. And I, for too long, I accepted that, well, that's the life of a sex addict. And to find out now that actually, no, it doesn't have to be that way, that we really can be absolutely free of that obsession, almost effortlessly. It's I'm still beside myself 5 years later. So I want to share for me, what was the missing piece, and that was that 12th step. So what I get from the purpose of the steps now is not necessarily self-actualization. It's not to learn about myself. It's to put me in touch with the power that will solve all my problems. That's the goal of the steps. Another way of looking at it is the purpose of the steps is for me to have an experience. It's an experiential program. It's for me to have an experience that is greater than the experience I could get from acting out. So my relationship with God has to provide an effect that's greater than the effect I could get from acting out. If that experience with God is not as great, it's just, it's tick-tock. It's just a matter of time before I act out again. Because my mind is no dummy. My addiction is no dummy. It's, if the experience with God isn't as powerful as the experience of acting out, my mind basically does something like this. So this is really cute, Brian. You're going to lots of meetings and you're sharing on the topic and you're meeting other people and you're talking about deep stuff and you're trying to be spiritual. It's really, really cute, Brian. But we both know where we can get an experience that will just knock you out. That give you something that you cannot, that we both know is the most amazing experience ever, which is that of acting out. So unless I have my mind experience something that's greater than that of acting out, my mind is always going to be obsessed. My mind is always going to obsess on the thing that it can get the greatest experience from. So that for me is what the steps do, is they allow me to have an experience that's greater than the experience of acting out. So I'm going to start with on page 88 of the big book here. And for folks who do have a copy of the AA Big Book with them, it's the same page regardless of the edition. And it's the very last line on page 88. at this point in the reading, they've basically just given the instructions for the first 11 steps to the reader. And at this point, the reader has recovered, past tense that is, they have recovered from their sex addiction. And they've done it in a matter of days or weeks. That was the path that these guys took. They weren't spending months and years doing it. They knew that the real sex addict has a very short window, in their case, the alcoholic has a very short window of time to get that experience with God. The mind's not going to put up with months of misery and obsession. It's got to be done quite quickly. So they warn me on the bottom of page 88. They say, but this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. So this thing that's in quotes that says faith without works is dead, I can also look at that as this experience with God without works is dead. And those first 11 steps is just building the faith part. It's basically like I'm dressing up for the party, but I haven't got to the party yet. And everyone knows, I don't know if anyone's done this, but like you spend like an hour or two getting ready for that the big formal party. You put on the tuxedo and you got the limo ready. And well, maybe a lot of us don't do that. Actually, I've never done that, the limo part. But just imagine getting on the tuxedo and getting all dressed and everything, and then not actually going to the party. And that's what the 12th step is. This experience that they had, it's going to that party. It's having an experience that's just unbelievably amazing. And this is where I got every time I worked the steps in the past where I was not able to achieve sobriety. I would work those first 11 steps like, I mean, I was the employee of the month in SAA. I was amazing and working those first 11 steps. And I could impress you with all the stuff I said in meetings with the experience I was having with these first 11 steps. And when it got to the 12th, I would take shortcuts. And then I would act out again, you know, a month or two later. So this line, faith without works was dead, really catches me now. The other part is on page 14. I'll go there now. So on page 14, this is from a section of the book that one of the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the guys that was involved in basically codifying, designing those 12 steps. He's describing his experience right after he's recovered from his alcoholism, or in our case, our sex addiction. And although they didn't use the word sponsor in those times, the equivalent of a sponsor was a man named Ebbie Thatcher. And Ebbie is sitting down with him in the hospital bed. Bill has taken all 12 steps in the hospital bed, or the equivalent of the 12 steps. And Ebbie is basically giving him the same warning that we just read, which is, hey, Bill, you're having a pretty amazing experience right now. I know you feel like you got things covered, but I got some last words to give you. And it was this at the bottom of page 14. So I'll read that now. He said, my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others, as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. Sorry. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, or in our case, we would surely act out again. And if he acted out, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other sex addicts to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate, for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time, and I was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, or in our case, back to act out. But I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another sex addict would save the day. Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair, and on talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going. So when this was read to me, after 17 years of not having success with the 12 steps, this is where it was pointed out that perhaps the way I had interpreted the 12 steps was what was to blame for my relapses. And I had to compare the way I had been working the 12th step with what Bill is describing here and what they also describe in another part of the book in chapter 7. I already told a little bit about how I was working the 12th step. Basically, I would come to meetings and I would share about myself and I would hope that someone would benefit from it. But I knew, like, it was always on schedule. Like, it was always, you know, I knew at 7:30 I would leave for the meeting, 8 o'clock the meeting starts, 9 o'clock the meeting ends. I'd try and hang around for 15, 20 minutes or so to talk with people, and then I'd get to go home. It was very contained and structured, and I got to have the rest of my day with my time and my ideas. And it was selfish. It was a selfish way of working that 12th step for me. And what I got from this this reading was, first of all, it was really comforting to hear that here was Bill W., and he had taken the steps, and he had recovered from his alcoholism, and he was still plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. I love that line. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. And so that explained why it was that that someone can work the first 11 steps and still be plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment like I was. And then that very next line is what I was doing different. What Bill was doing was, this sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another sex addict would save the day. Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair, and I'm talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and sit on my feet. That's what I wasn't doing. What I was doing when I was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment, or plagued by obsession, after having taken those first 11 steps, is I had somehow got it into my mind. I guess I had heard so often that the solution to that was go to meetings. It was just kind of ingrained in me, this idea that go to meetings, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. If you don't like going to meetings, you're not going to enough meetings. Keep going to meetings until you like meetings. If you're having a hard time, go to meetings. All those things, if you want to see what happens to people who don't go to meetings, go to meetings. Like this idea that meeting attendance was the solution. And while it may work for some folks, it wasn't working for me. I was a meeting-making fool. I was going to a lot of meetings each week, and I wasn't able to stay sober. So with the difference here was that in this book, they did have meetings, and they weren't saying anything about meeting attendance having anything to do with the solution to their alcoholism. Instead, they were looking for someone to help. So while a meeting may be a place that I can find a newcomer who's looking for help, it's not the only place. So I can go to, I can just Google the local bail, like where's the local bail bonds or the homeless shelters or the street churches, or the pastor of a church or of my church, or the county jails. And I can go to them and I can let them know who I am, that this is how I stay sober and I'm just a resource. Is there anything that I can do to help? Do you think there's any of your clients that might benefit from this? And 9 times out of 10, they all look at me very strangely and they have no idea how to respond. And it doesn't matter because I get to stay sober. And 1 times out of 10, they will say, you know what? We've had this problem that you're describing in our facility here for years and we had no idea what to do with it. Would you come by next week and talk to some of our clients about this? And that becomes like the highlight of my month. So, for example, last night, myself and another gentleman here in my local area who's also taken the 12 steps, we take a ride about 2 hours south, and it's a really inconvenient ride. Like it's rush hour traffic, and I just get off work, and I can't overstate how inconvenient it is in my life. But we show up at the county jail, and we do this on a regular basis, and they bring us in and we speak to about 30 to 40 people in these big orange jumpsuits that are in prison for or jail for various things, and we talk to them about sex addiction. And we just give them a really simple tool for diagnosis that they give me in the doctor's opinion, or the first 44 pages of this book. We give them a really simple tool to, when they get out, how to find a healthy meeting. And then we give them a way to contact us. And both him and I, just like Bill describes in this reading, we leave amazingly lifted up on my feet. I think the way Bill describes it here is, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. And it is a design for living that rough going. That's the experience I get from this. It's just a powerful experience. And of course, you know, I'll still go to meetings. Now that I've taken all 12 steps, I am no longer allowed to go and talk about myself in meetings. I'm there for the new guy. So I'm not there to share about how bad my day was, or the fight I got in with my wife, or the grief I'm having over my dead dog. When I come to meetings, if I open my mouth, it's just to speak on what this program has done for me, and then I'm available to help if someone wants. I'm trying to meet that fifth tradition that we read, I think we read earlier, that the primary purpose in having these gatherings isn't to make friends. It isn't group therapy. It isn't to have barbecues. It's so that we can carry the message to the sex addict who still suffers. The message being that I've had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And from this book's perspective, there is no other message. It's just that. And when I stay focused on just that, and the other folks in my group do that as well, it's the meeting becomes just a powerful, powerful tool. And the newcomer, they leave the meeting with the tool to diagnose themselves. They don't have to go to 6 or 7 meetings to figure out if this is for them. I've got a really quick way to do it. And if they have diagnosed themselves, they can immediately start to recover with one of us. I'm going to go now to page 89. Now, the way these guys work the steps, and the way that I, after 17 years, started to work the steps in a way that, you know, I recovered almost overnight with this particular approach. Once I got to this 12th step, the concern that I had, and that a lot of people that I work with have, is, oh my gosh, now I have to start sponsoring other people. I'm gonna hurt them. I'm gonna say something that, you know, that's gonna hurt them, or they're gonna relapse because of me, and I'm not qualified to do this. And this comes up a lot, especially because I work with guys and who, just like me, have spent a lot of time unsuccessfully trying to stay sober using the 12 steps. And they're used to this idea that you can't sponsor someone unless you've got at least a year of sobriety. I don't know who made that up, but it's nowhere in the instructions for how to recover in this book. And you know, like I mentioned before, that this particular path, these guys went through the steps in a period of a few days to at most a few weeks. And after that period of time, they're immediately going out, boots on the ground, and they're looking for ways. They're actively seeking people that they might be able to help that have the same problem. And so for a guy to start sponsoring someone after only a few days of sobriety, or even a few weeks, they claim, you know, that they're not qualified, that they're not ready yet. And it's a common thing. And of course, as soon as they start doing it, they start to have that experience with God that's greater than the experience of acting out, and they're kind of sold on the idea. So I usually like to read this particular chapter. Chapter 7 is almost like an instruction manual for me on how to work one-on-one with the next individual and what each conversation should look like. So it starts off with this sentence here. It says, "Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from acting out as intensive work with other sex addicts. It works when other activities fail." So here it tells me that of all the activities that are suggested to me in SAA, this is the one that that beats them all. When I'm having that once I've taken those first 11 steps, you know, I'm still subject to sexual temptation. Like I'll never be cured of this thing, and I live in a human body. I am wired with a human sexual instinct. So it's not if, but it's when sexual instinct arises. This is what I do. I go out and I look for someone to help. And that, so it's not necessarily go to a meeting and share about it. It's not write in my journal. It's not call my therapist. It's not call my sponsor. I immediately go out and I start looking for someone to help when sexual temptation arises. and then this next paragraph speaks a bit about that experience I was suggesting earlier. Life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. So here they're kind of speaking to that experience I was describing earlier. This is like if someone hasn't, you know, has taken those first 11 steps, but they haven't yet had the experience of sponsoring someone and then seeing that person that I've sponsored in turn start to sponsor someone else, we haven't worked that 12th step to the extent that these guys are describing. It's an experience that I must not miss. And until I had that experience and started to basically build a fellowship in my local area that way, I was kind of twisting in the wind with my sobriety. And today, I have frequent contact with the guys that I work with the guys that I've recovered and are just, peers with me in this program, and we work together. And we keep each other accountable on the principles of this program. So it's been really useful there. And as far as sponsorship goes, this idea, in the previous 17 years, I had this idea that a sponsor almost took the form of a higher power. And from this book's perspective, you know, they're very much of the ilk that, you know, these guys that are helping me, they're just as susceptible to relapse as the next guy, you know, unless they've taken those 12 steps and keep working them. And that my sponsor is human. And that I'm not to take his advice as the word of God after I've taken those 12 steps. And one of the symptoms of me using my sponsor like a higher power, which is going to get me into trouble, is saying things like, oh my God, my sponsor is so amazing. or I get really confused when my sponsor leaves town, or I almost relapse myself when my sponsor relapses or dies. Or I'm taking their advice on issues outside of sex addiction. The three worst pieces of advice I've ever taken in my life came from sponsors. And it was because I made the mistake of asking them for advice on stuff outside of recovery from sex addiction. And they made the mistake of giving it. So as a sponsor, if I stay really close to just chapter 7, like here's how I work with other guys, and then they ask me, hey, Brian, you know, what do you think I should do about, should I quit my job? Should I leave my wife? Should I move to this new city? My response hopefully will be, well, how was your relationship with God in the last 24 hours? Tell me about what you did in the last 24 hours with God. How was your morning meditation? How was your evening meditation? Did you answer those 10 questions in the evening that they suggest on page 86? And now tell me about the time you spent looking for or seeking others in the last 24 hours. What did it look like? Who do you talk with? What were their names? How did it go? And if the answers to both of those aren't sufficient, then I'm not going to talk anything about, you know, the original question. Instead, we'll talk about how to get that experience with God back up to par. And usually what happens is when that experience with God is greater than the experience of acting out, They don't need to ask me questions like that. Those things, the answers come naturally. With that, I'll stop. Again, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak, and I'll pass. Thank you.